The meeting is hereby called to order at 1 o'clock for a special meeting. And if you would, please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Ready, get set, go.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let it be known that we do have a quorum. All five board members are here and present. And the purpose of the meeting is one, as I said, a special meeting, and it will be under the water supply engineering concepts, a workshop, mostly for your benefit, and it will be conducted by the Army Corps of Engineers. At this point, based on our good friend Roberts, Mr. Roberts' rules, we would entertain public comment. So if there's anything that you would like to talk about on the items that are going to be discussed, please raise your hand and be recognized with your name. And 3 minutes, if you would. In the back, yes. Oh, Elizabeth. The only time you're going to be able to speak?
Do we have audio? There you go.
Thank you very much. My question is, is this the only time for public comment, or will we have other occasions in this meeting to comment on issues at hand?
The answer is yes.
Is this our only time for public comment? Yes?
This is simply for you to comment on, in fact, the items that are listed in the agenda.
And we will also be able to make such comments later.
Thank you
very much.
Since I see no additional comments, I will close this part of the meeting and turn it over to the Army Corps. Whoever, in fact, that may be.
Well, let me get up for a second here. I'm Bob Gressens with Cambria CSD. I need to make one correction, particularly the fact that I was talking with Bert Edling earlier on last week trying to meet the June 7th deadline, and we did indicate to him mistakenly that it was a Army Corps meeting. This is actually a Cambria CSD-led meeting. I was the one that pushed for this with the Army Corps team. They're willing to work with us in providing the technical staff here today. So my apologies for the confusion I may have created in that earlier discussion with the Cambrian at the time, but this is actually a CCSD-led effort. I had learned about the abilities of CDM quite some time ago, and we have one of their experts here today on how they conduct a very transparent and professional approach to selecting alternatives and to coming up with the evaluation criteria. So that was the main push for my reasoning on this particular workshop. So as long as I set the record straight on that, again, that was some confusion I created due to a rush to meet a paper publication deadline, so you'd all know about this ahead of time. So without further ado, we have a couple of rules that we want to cover with our facilitator, Sam Genaway, and then I'll speak afterwards and go through the outline of today's meeting. But it's very important for us to cover these rules because we're experimenting for one of the very first times in my memory with a webinar-type approach. So we have some people who are remotely connected to us via the internet and through an audio connection. And if we're not careful and we don't explain these rules, the sound in this room will deteriorate quickly as well as the sound on the other end. So that was one important issue. And Sam, if you could cover the rules here. Well, let me back this up a minute. There we go. Okay, thank you.
Very good. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure and an honor to be back again. My name is Sam Genoway. I work for a company called Catherine Padilla and Associates. We're a community outreach firm, and we've been hired by the CCSD to help facilitate these discussions. And I'd like to thank you again for inviting me back. How many of you were here at the meeting that we had in March, the EIR-EIS scoping meeting? Excellent. That's great. So you can get an idea of hopefully that's the kind of dialogue that we would like to have. We do have some technology things, however. First of all, every once in a while, especially as Bob is talking or Dan is talking, the slides may lag, and that's because we're doing a webinar. There are people who are watching this presentation and listening to this presentation on the internet. Because of that, whenever you're going to speak, it's going to be necessary for me to run over to you with the microphone, or they're not going to be able to hear you. There's also an opportunity for those who are on the webinar to call in and also speak as well. Some of the rules that we have, it's going to be a facilitated discussion. You can take the 2 to 3 minutes, but my hope is that we're going to give everybody a chance to speak, to say everything that you really need to say. We'd like everybody to be respectful and civil. This is an opportunity for the community to come together and help the CCSD board in their decision-making process as they work through this entire effort. If you've got any questions or comments, I'd encourage you to direct those through to me. We have a number of content experts that are here, technical content experts, Dan dealing with the criteria, folks who deal with the water board that I'd be able to turn to be able to address any of the questions or that you might have or any of the comments. Once again, please make sure I've got the microphone to you so those that are on the internet can hear you. Are there any questions about the rules? You also should have gotten, when you walked in, green dots or blue dots and yellow dots. And so hopefully everybody has those. Did anybody not get any dots? So we have one lady, we'll get you dots of coming towards you. And as far as the speaker cards, the speaker card for this discussion is if you have any additional comments that you want to write, if you want to reinforce something in writing, but we don't need to gather speaker cards. As long as you put your hand up, we'll have that discussion. But I know that sometimes it happens, you just finish with the meeting and you come up with a brilliant concept or an idea, write it out and give it to us. It'll be part of the public record for this meeting. Any questions or comments about that part of the process? All right, we'll tell you what the dots are all about in a little while. But in the meantime, I'll turn it over to Bob, who will give you some background information to get you caught up to date. And just before I turn it to Bob, I just want to remind everybody what the narrative is. As you recall, since almost all of you were here in March, you asked us to come back before, the alternatives, the different concepts had been settled on to get you up to date as to some of the thinking that's going on. That's what we're going to be doing today, is to give you an idea of some of the thinking that's going on, but we need your active participation to help us in the selection criteria, to help us figure out how we measure each of these different concepts. So that's our purpose for today's meeting. And we'll be coming back in July to put some closure on this part of the process. We'll explain more of that later. With that, Bob.
Great. Thank you, Sam. I'll just go through the outline briefly here. We'll have some introductions here in a second. Purpose, objectives, ground rules are already covered, of course. I won't go rethread that, but I'll give you a quick planning background basically on what has changed in recent years on the planning. Coordination of our technical team. Some of the water supply concepts we'll describe in brief, the preliminary screening criteria, and then some preliminary screening that the technical team has recommended to date on just the first tier. We're also going to fill you in on further development of the screened alternatives or concepts that you've seen in the past if you were at the scoping session meeting. The ranking methodology will be, again, bringing in CDM's expert, Dan, at this point, and then Sam is going to get very involved with the voting process on what you all think is important and also hearing what your comments and concerns are. So our intent here is to be very transparent in developing how we're going to evaluate alternatives so that you don't simply get a report with, here it is. We want it to be, you know, your project. We want to hear from you. We've heard you already in the past, and we're trying to get it right this time. So without further ado, I'll introduce you. You've met Sam Genoway, our facilitator. Again, the questions and comments we're going to direct to Sam. He's going to act like the traffic cop and trying to direct the questions to the appropriate person here. We have Kathy Anderson with the Army Corps. She is our project manager. You want to stand up as we so we all know everyone. And then Sava Nedich is our lead technical engineer with the CDM Smith Consulting Company. We have Dan Rodrigo in the back. Dan is CDM's expert at the developing a criteria evaluation type approach here and discussing in public settings like we have here. We have Sandy in the back, who is also Sandy. I'm going to mess up your last name, so Sui, who is leading the technical effort to make sure we had this available online and has also helped quite a bit behind the scenes here. Did I leave anyone out from our team here? I hope I have caught everyone. Thank you. let me just get going here. As far as our workshop purpose, we want to, again, obtain your input and opinions and other stakeholders to consider while completing an engineering evaluation of various supply concepts. Again, this is more technically engineering-driven as far as this discussion. The evaluation is going to be provided to the environmental team, which is a separate team that's not here today, for consideration as they are completing a draft environmental impact report and environmental impact statement, a combined type of report. The EIR or EIS evaluation criteria are going to be very focused on the environmental details. We get a list down to them that makes technical sense, and they are going to study in detail as far as the potential environmental impacts of each one of those alternatives at that point. But that's not part of today's discussion. Objectives, again, is to go through the concepts that were discussed briefly in the March 15 scoping session and any subsequent refinements that the technical team has made to them since then, receive additional inputs from you as the stakeholders, and as well as obtain inputs on the evaluation matrix that's going to come out of this effort in the engineering evaluation for further concept comparisons. I'm going to just not bore everyone with details of the long history and litany of planning here, but just hit some high points on updating the project background and then talk about the technical coordination. Just some updates on probably recent years that affect planning. We had the Water Conservation Act of 2009 adopted by the state of California. That resulted in the CCSD adopting a 5% reduction goal for its future demands. So there was all that was presented as part of the 2010 Urban Water Management Plan update that was formally adopted by the board in February. So we have that on the horizon that's affecting future demand estimates. There was a settlement agreement in 2006 with the Warren property, which was an ag user. So there was a dispute on water rights. So we have to consider all the agreements that are out there. That's one key agreement that we have to consider as we look at alternatives. There was the formation of the offshore Cambria State Marine Park back in July of 2010. And that has had consequences on just where can you do your geotechnical exploration and so on and so forth. There was also, as a result of that and probably other controlling factors, our inability to investigate and define the subterranean characteristics at both the San Simeon Creek and Santa Rosa Creek beach paleo channels, which we thought initially had some good promise as a way to remove seawater subterranean underneath the seafloor. But we have not been able to obtain that data to be able to proceed with much certainty on those. The process with the Army Corps engineering team involves technical information on alternatives being developed, which is, again, CDM Smith is going to be the lead consultant on that. The alternative screening process is needed to develop a reasonable range of alternatives for the detailed environmental analysis and review, and that's related to the National Environmental Policy Act and what the Corps has to comply with, again, when that environmental team starts working on the details. Again, we are focused on describing and soliciting input on the engineering technical criteria, which the engineering team is going to then use to help screen the various supply concepts, and that gets passed over to the environmental team at that point. And this is just another graphic of that same thing. Again, we have the engineering team represented by this arrow. Today, we're doing initial concepts, draft technical screening, and evaluation criteria. The workshop two that we have proposed now and are scheduled for July 19th, again, in this room at the same time, would review the weighting of those criteria and the cost of the different concepts, at least planning level estimates, and other details that the engineering team will have by that time. And then on the 26th of July, our regular scheduled board meeting, is when we're proposing to come back and say, okay, here's how the ranking looks right now. And as far as reasonable range of alternatives for the EIR, EIS that we want to spend time on, we want to get the board's approval at that point to say, okay, we agree, we think we should study these number and these particular number of alternatives, because we can't simply do 30 of them. You know, it's just way too many at this point. So we have a lot of concepts out there that we're trying to get down to a reasonable range. And as far as the concepts go, we have both ones that were developed by the CCSD in recent, you know, year, and then also past studies. As many people know in Cambria, there's been numerous studies done in the past on different alternatives for water supply. So we had a lot of reference information to go on. The poster board concepts that we showed during the March 15th scoping session, again, they were in the back of the room, so it wasn't really a part of a formal PowerPoint presentation, but they're all up on the table in front of you here. We will have a break later on if you want to take time and look at them in detail. I'll have some slides on how they have refined been further since then that I'll show on this PowerPoint. The draft concepts that we have thus far include seawater desalination concepts, brackish water desalting concepts, some freshwater concepts, and then some hybrid, like combinations and other ideas that go beyond that. Certain concepts may end up getting combined in order to meet a water demand target. As part of the April board meeting, I did a presentation on another issue, but I borrowed this slide from that, and it involves going after a sensitivity analysis approach. In other words, all the various alternatives will have different supply capabilities, and consider a range of capacities based on both quantitative and qualitative factors. So you would not eliminate one just because it happens to have a little less capacity than another, but look at the sensitivity and the trade-offs, and that's what that last bullet is to look at a matrix of all the alternatives and assess whether the impacts, costs, and other factors offset the increased risk or lessening of reliability through, say, the use of a lower contingency factor, having a smaller project, perhaps, that maybe has less reliability. So there's going to be trade-offs between cost and reliability that come up at that point. We don't know what they are at this juncture, but that's where this is leading. We did do, as far as the technical team, some preliminary, what we're calling tier one screening. And the basic criteria that we were thinking of as technical people was, can the concept ever be defined adequately, and how much risk or delay would occur if it were pursued to the point to be able to prove its feasibility? You know, we really have that length of time or luxury of time for that, or the cost for that matter. And is the concept proven by actual real-world application? In other words, is it an unproven technology or similarly not suitable to a municipal water supply? You know, municipal water supplies are a little different from smaller, you know, household-type applications and so forth. Would it provide enough water, even in combination with other approaches, to meet project objectives for drought protection and emergency supply needs? And are there other practical limits, like, and this, again, is technical, such as not having enough site area to actually construct a particular concept? So rather than get into all the details with you on this PowerPoint, you know, we basically went through that screening process of about 30 different approaches. We had, for example, seawater desalination at Shamel Park, a joint facility with Morro Bay, a facility down at Estero Bay. We considered one at Lambton Park. Up in San Simeon, there was an offshore concept that was several miles offshore in very deep water. Intruded seawater, somehow getting water into an inland well, and then using brackish water near the district's San Simeon Creek Road facilities. The brackish water, again, was near the district's existing well field, kind of between the well field and the wastewater percolation ponds. We're also looking at one that you'll see in a few minutes here on using a shale formation up north of the old San Simeon Village area. Some of the freshwater alternatives were Whale Rock Reservoir, both with and without Nacimiento water exchange. Direct lines coming from Nacimiento over the mountain, in-stream and off-stream storage reservoirs, and then aquifer storage and recovery and rock. And then there was a last one that was a dehumidification process. I think we call it tropospheric water, but that's taking moisture out of the air and having it condense onto an air conditioning type coil approach. Then again, there's other combinations beyond that, combining them with more aggressive water conservation, gray water. We've considered water marketing, which is fallowing agreements with agriculture. So of all those concepts, our technical team believes there's about 12 that would go into the next level of study. And we do have a handout that goes into much more level of detail than what we wanted to show on a slide. So Sawa will make that available if people really want to look in the nuts and bolts. We didn't feel we had the time to go into that level of detail as part of this PowerPoint, but we could certainly respond to questions, as Sam mentioned earlier. So at this point, I'll take a break and see if there are any questions on what we've covered thus far before we get into some more descriptions of the concepts themselves.
And the question should be as the process that got us to here or anything else. Go ahead.
Just a quick question, Bob. On the CCSD website, which of those concepts are not going to be talked about today? Just because I saved them on my iPad, you said that.
Okay.
You mentioned so many.
I'll go by my rough memory now, and it is in that handout that you just received as far as the ones that have a no next to them. I know we have decided to, for example, we thought Lambton Park should be screened out because there was a problem with the construction staging and the size of the site there. And I might have to refer to Sava for some help from him on remembering which ones from the March 20th meeting got screened out. That's the only one that comes to mind at the moment. And I may have missed one. So let me come back if my memory kicks in on that, but that's the one I do remember out of those that we've recommended against.
One question is for you to put the microphone more straight to your mouth.
Okay, sorry about that. Thank you.
Did everybody get a copy of this listing? A few more? Let me give you one here. Sava's passing some out. I got a couple here. Are there any other questions about what you've learned so far today as far as the process and how we've narrowed these down to a certain extent? We have a question over here as he goes running. There we go.
I have a question about the organization of the process. In a very early slide, you mentioned an engineering consulting firm, and this the gentleman in the front row, whose name I can't remember. Sal, you're the head of that consulting firm. And so does that mean that you were hired by the CCSD to basically do the study from the engineering standpoint?
Hang on, because I have to bring the microphone. Remember, we have people on the webinar, and they can't hear it without a microphone.
CDM has contract to do this engineering services with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. We are actually their expert.
Wait, hold on, because we want to make sure everybody could hear you. I know this is kind of weird. But
it gets pretty complex because we have the CCSD, the Army Corps, an engineering firm, and then there's a project director. You're with the Army Corps? Mm-hmm. Okay. Then there's another group that was mentioned that's going to be writing up part of it called the Environmental Project Team. Who are they and how do they get appointed?
That would be the Chambers Group. What it is, ultimately the process is, it's the CCSD is the person who's in charge of this, or is the organization that's in charge of this. They have hired a number of technical consultants, because it's not like these type of projects happen every day. They've hired a number of very qualified technical consultants. One of those happens to be the Army Corps, is also a technical consultant to the board and is working with the board. This is a board-driven project, not an Army Corps or a consultant-driven project. They've hired folks like myself who have special technical skills, and Dan who also has technical skills to help aid the process. But ultimately, the decision makers are your officials that you have sitting at the counter there.
I'll clarify a little bit. We have a Section 219 authority through Congress to partner with the CCSD for this study, the Cambria Seawater and Water Supply Analysis Study. We've hired CDM, and the environmental contractor is Chambers Group. So they were hired by the Corps of Engineers for this project.
Okay, sorry.
Where I was getting to is then ultimately all of these costs are paid for by the CCSD for all the consultants. And I would like to know how much they're all going to cost us.
Okay, very good. So
those costs are being paid for through the Army Corps of Engineers through our congressionally authorized funding that we've received. Right. We do have a partnership agreement with Cambria Community Services District. They've paid their in-kind in the form of services, not cash.
That answer your question? Very good. Are there any other questions or comments about what you've heard already? If not, let's go ahead and move on to the next segment.
Yeah, I have a question. Yep. So what you're saying basically... So what you're saying basically now, these are the only concepts we're to consider because you guys have done all the screening already, so this is what we're looking at?
This is the list currently. It went from about 30 concepts, now been narrowed down to, it's really four major concepts, and then there's different options within those different...
Do we get to see the 30?
They're on the list.
Of the 30.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Because those were either generated by initial ideas. When we had the meeting in March, some people came up with some suggestions. Those ideas were studied as well. And through the initial criteria, they were able to eliminate the 30 down to 12. Does that make sense?
I just was at the meeting in March, and I don't remember going through that process. In fact, I remember Steve Figler saying that the community would like to sit down and go through the selection criteria of how any of these are being selected.
Right, that's what we're doing today.
But we're down to these 30. And you've already eliminated many, right?
There's the 30 total universe. The initial cut brought those down to about 12 concepts that seem to be viable that would raise to the next level of going through this more stringent criteria, this evaluation criteria. So that's where we're at. But we wanted to make sure that everybody had at least every idea that was generated since March for this project.
And what you're saying is that every idea that's ever been generated, not just since March, has been considered somehow in this screening.
That's an absolute. You're asking me. Is that an absolute? Is that
during the March 15th, there were generated about 20 additional concepts. We have initially 8 or something like that. At the end of the day, we came up with 30 different concepts, including all concepts that we heard from public here. Then in next step, we went through the feasibility concept, technical feasibility. If it is feasible or it's not feasible, it's not a waste. We cannot stay forever for something that is not feasible. So most of the concepts that you will see here are technically not feasible, or coming up with technology that is in a very early stage of development will take a lot of times to be developed in practically applicable technology. So all comments that you have here, all ideas that were generated at the time were put on daylight.
We apparently have to turn this volume up a little.
And tertiary treatment of... Is tertiary treatment of wastewater?
Yes, it was... It was
we have at least 4 or 5 alternatives.
That are in here.
If you saw on the...
If,
If we would have gone back, if we were going back a couple of slides, there was a slide that had one concept. One was desalinization. Concept two was brackish water. Concept four included other concepts, including hybrid. And we even had written up there. Yeah, here it is. There was one other slide that showed that gray water, for instance, gray water processing was part of that option. So yes, that was in there. Does that answer your question? Yeah, all the ideas that are pretty broad range that were able to survive did survive. So let me get your comment, and then your comment was mostly you just couldn't hear, right? Okay.
Yes, Steve Figler, I was at the earlier meeting where we had the papers on the wall and our ideas were written on them, and I was the one who made a point of having Cambria citizens be involved in the process, be at the table when decisions were being made. And I was concerned about not so much who was being chosen, but how they were being chosen. And you haven't included us in any fashion so far, according to your slides and words.
Well, actually, though, what I'd like to suggest is that if there, you now have the list of all the ideas within the universe that was generated that were evaluated, and you've now seen that those have been narrowed down to 12. If there's one that you find that you could argue was still viable after the initial cut, then we would suggest, is there a specific item on there that you saw?
That, sir, is sidestepping my point. My point is that there was agreement that Cambria citizens would be at the table, right, involved in the process. Right. Asking me which I like or don't like on the list of 12 completely sidesteps that point.
Right. So to get directly to your point, that is the purpose of today's meeting, is that we have to establish a level of criteria to judge every one of the concepts. You're going to be weighing in, and that's why you were given some dots, to weigh in on which criteria you feel is most important and secondarily important, so when the technical analysis is done, you've helped weigh into the client. If I'm going to directly to your question is, will the people of Cambria be able to decide what the solution is? You're providing an additional input, but your input will also be weighed against state and federal law, best practices within the industry. You're a part of the decision-making process. You're not the sole makers of the decision-making process. I'll be right back. That's right. Right, and so let me get through the rest of the meeting, and then afterwards, if you feel that you were not included as part of the decision-making process in establishing the criteria that will be used to evaluate not only the 12 options, but could also be applied to all 30 options, then we'll deal with that issue at that time.
Name is Jeff Hillman. A few moments ago, Valerie asked a question about who is paying for all this and like who is in charge, and the answer I got that you spoke was emphatically everything is absolutely under the guises of the CCSD. Now, about a year ago or however long ago, it seemed like the board turned over everything and said, no, the Army Corps is in charge of everything. And that way the Army Corps could do a circumvention of the Coastal Commission and wouldn't have to. So it was kind of like, in my opinion, just as a member of this community, it was like an end run, kind of a, you know, a devious way to get around going by the rules of the EIRs and all of those kind of things. So you're confirming with absolute certainty at this point that no, it's not the Army Corps' project. It is the CCSD, so we are subjected to all of the state and local laws that apply to doing anything on this terrain. Is that correct?
That's correct. It is a partnership between the CCSD and the Army Corps due to congressional legislation from a few years ago. But ultimately, it will be this board. We'll be taking these evaluation criteria and we'll be applying it to the various concepts that are out there, and they'll make a decision based on that.
Subjecting us to all of the environmental protection laws within the state of California. Okay.
That's right. We are guided by both the state and federal laws. And the state of California laws tend to be a little bit more stringent than the federal laws, I think one could argue. But yes, we're subjected to both of those. Right. Right, right, and also the Coastal Commission, whatever their views and values, and that's why it has to be a cooperation of a variety of agencies when it comes to actually making the decision as to. Well, yeah, that may have been the case. All I know is that when we had started with the project in March, the community said, we want to be a part of this. This is important to us. And this meeting today is an absolute direct result of that March meeting, because you wanted to, before we went too far along on the options, where we're at right now is a chance for you to weigh in on where we happen to be. Yeah. Yeah. Ultimately, these folks up here are going to be making those decisions.
I don't want to mean to hog things, but just what... First, I'm just going to state, we voted about a month ago to pay $15,000 for Hard Rock Drilling Consultant. So the CCSD is paying that because for some reason you chose not to. Well, what are the dots for?
Well, we'll get to that. They're going to be helping us with the evaluation criteria, and that's going to be the next big part of the meeting. Okay. Once again, what I'm looking for are questions from or comments from what we've heard talked about earlier. Let me get here, and then I'll get to you folks.
When you were making the elimination, or even the process of comparing the different treatments, was there any economic factors as to what it would be costing per household in the decision making?
Sure. Actually, some of you are skipping ahead of where we were going, but one of those is cost effectiveness is one of the criteria, and this will be your opportunity to judge whether that should be the number one ranking or number six ranking or wherever it lands.
It wasn't done in the initial elimination.
When they went from the 30 down to the 12, that was one of the factors that was considered.
But it's not on the sheet.
It's... Yeah. Okay. You want to just talk briefly about how you get from the 30 down to the 12, and talk about a cut. Give me like one example or two examples of that. Why they didn't make the cut?
Okay. We watched mainly on technically feasibility of these alternatives, because bringing something that's technically not feasible, it doesn't make sense here, because we will be wasting time. One example, we had option to have Lambton Park open ocean intake alternative. It is almost not possible because in order to make this happen, we have to drill through the magmatic rocks about 3,000 to 4,000 foot below ocean sea. It's really not practically feasible. The other case was, somebody came with the idea that we can have this tropospheric precipitation to suck in the water vapor from the air, precipitate and make water. This is a great product, but it's more for individual home households rather than for a large municipal water system. So maybe in future, This technology will evolve in 10, 5, 15 years, and we didn't rule completely out, but for this purpose, it's not practically applicable for this application.
And was cost one of the criteria that you used in this initial screening?
We didn't have cost as initial screening. We just look on technical feasibility. That will be done in next step, because we didn't want to spend time and money developing alternatives that don't have technical basis for that. So after this meeting, the surviving alternatives will be further developed, and then subjected to the cost analysis from both perspectives, from perspective of the construction cost, for which money can come from federal government or other sources, and also equally, if not even more important for stakeholders here, operation and maintenance costs, that is, will come in your bill. So at the end, I think we're talking about July 19th, you're going to have that information, and you will have opportunity using the evaluation criteria that you will establish today, then we're going to come up with first cut and then get your inputs. That's the concept.
Okay, let me get to a couple more questions, and then we're going to move on with the rest of the presentation so you can learn more about the options and also learn a little bit more about the evaluation criteria and why you have a bunch of dots.
One quick question. I do not see in this very small font size sheet, sir, and I talked with you about it, I do not see tertiary treatment. And that was brought up in March. Toilet to tap, I know it's educationally a long-term project perhaps, but I'd like to know, how come tertiary treatment is not in here?
Check it. Let me. I'll get him to talk. But it was that would be that gray water that we had pointed out.
You have at least two of these concepts that are based on tertiary treatment. Or actually, if you look at the San Simeon Creek Road alternative, that you, Bob will present this later on. This concept assumes that the the water from the their wastewater treatment plant. Excuse me. Brought to the San Simeon percolation ponds, percolated, then pumped out from the new wells, and that water will be subjected to much higher level of treatment than tertiary, subjected to the so-called advanced water purification process. Yeah. Thank you. Yes. My apology for that, but this is our technical terminology. And there is one more alternative. Actually, there are two more alternatives. One is it came on a suggestion from, I think, Coastal Commission that we can use a secondary effluent from, let's say, Morro Bay wastewater treatment plant, bring it here, further purify, and use that second tertiary effluent or advanced purified effluent as offset for other water demands, such as irrigation and other needs.
Yes.
No, that's not part
of it. The question for those on the webinar is, what happened to the toilet to tap?
To produce really pure water, not just pure water. And then we have two other options. One option is to use directly into the pipe, and the other option is to recharge in the ground again, and then pump it, disinfect, and use again. So these are all concepts and ideas. I think this, we're going to get your inputs on this and your thoughts about the whole thing.
All right, very good. I'm going to take one more question, then we'll get into the questions or the presentation about those options, and that might answer some of the questions that have been coming up.
I'd like to hear a little bit more detail about why the off-stream storage concept or seasonal storage concept was deleted from further consideration. That always seemed like a potentially good concept, since the wells do, on an annual basis, put out enough water to meet our needs. It's just that we need seasonal storage.
Okay. Very good. Then I think that this is probably the best time to transition. Let's take a look at some of these overall concepts.
Okay, I'll try to get back to that question.
And we'll blend that in there.
I'm also going to suggest, too, we do have a break in the meeting for a few minutes, and if you feel like some concept that maybe you brought up during the March 20th meeting isn't getting enough discussion, you can always raise that type of question. You know, we can, if we have time to discuss it, we can. We're going to talk about a parking lot, you know, for certain types of questions where we might say, okay, that may not be on the agenda at the moment, but we'll put in the parking lot. And for those who want to stick around, maybe after the end of the discussion on criteria, we'll put it in the parking lot and we'll go back to it and talk about it then. So we want to make sure everybody's heard here. We want to make sure you understand we are listening to you as a community and just not doing this blindly. And so we definitely appreciate what you're saying here. And, you know, again, Sava and his team did make at least an initial screening based on technical issues only of what he thought would go from 30 down to about 12 to continue studying and put more effort into. But if you feel like maybe one of those screened ideas needs further discussion, we'll go back and discuss it.
And to that point, I think that Mr. Ziegler, is it? Figler, Mr. Figler, if I understand your question correctly, is why aren't all 30 of these ideas that were generated going through this same evaluation process? Why was there an initial cut made? We had 30 ideas. They have been narrowed down to 12. but we only had the 30 ideas. We haven't made a decision anything more than that, so I'm just a little confused, but we'll get to that in a little bit. Hopefully this part of the presentation will show you the wide berth of ideas that are going to be currently evaluated. And with that, please go ahead.
Okay, let me move forward here. Okay. This is going to cover further development of the screened concepts and where I can fit in some of the options that might have been tied to these that got screened out. I'll do that. Because there were a number of options on each one of these at times, and we finally said, okay, that doesn't make sense because of this, that, and the other when we were talking with Sava's team. this is one of four options that we thought would survive the Shamel Park subterranean intake approach. This process would have a RO desalination facility on district-owned property next to the wastewater plant. Wastewater plant's right here. Pipelines would go over to Shamel Park, and then we'd have horizontal directionally drilled intake as well as concentrate return lines that would probably come off the south parking lot of Shamel Park without disturbing the seafloor and design it to be far enough to not impact the lagoon. But again, this is one that we are going to do soil borings in this general area to try to determine, you know, what the lithology was of this paleo channel that runs out here. Again, we didn't get that data, so whether this goes any further is still a big question mark because we're having a hard time defining it as far as what is down there below the surface. And it's very difficult to put anything that would be drilling in the marine environment. As I mentioned before, the July 2010 ruling that formed the Cambria State Marine Park puts further restrictions on this offshore area than what previously existed before that time. But this is still in there. Again, there's definitely some benefits as far as the cost and it being more local and having local control on it and so forth and reliability, but there are still a number of questions at this point in time. We had three other options here, and I don't want to bore people with the details, but one was actually going out here and putting sheet pilings and removing a section of the seafloor. And, you know, the cost of that, the constructability of that, we just said, you know, let's not waste any more time on that idea. So these are the types of acronym or something at some point in time. But basically at the there is a shale formation that extends inland from the ocean here that has fractures already in it that we feel could serve as a conduit to bring seawater further inland so you wouldn't be in that marine environment that's so sensitive. The idea then would be to put a vertical well into that fractured rock and pump seawater that flows inland through that over to our San Simeon facility that would be off of San Simeon Creek Road. So you'd have a treatment facility down here off of San Simeon Creek Road. It's a little over 6 miles of pipeline. And then for the concentrate return, because it would be RO, which always has a seawater concentrate return, either use an existing pipeline that was built in 1996 that's underneath the seafloor in this area, or work on an arrangement with the San Simeon CSD and say, okay, let's use their existing wastewater outfall for that purpose. And part of that arrangement might even go say, okay, we can regionalize now and maybe take their wastewater, treat it at our wastewater plant in exchange for using their outfall. Or, you know, it has a lot of possibilities, some regional possibilities that we know the Coastal Commission likes regional ideas. So that's the gist of this concept here. So it's still surviving and we're still studying it. The one that I think is not changed too much from the March 20th meeting is a regional approach with the city of Morro Bay on their desalination facility. It's a much longer reach of pipeline and does go through some urbanized areas, which are some of the issues we'd have to contend with. But the city of Morro Bay has an existing seawater desalination facility near its wastewater treatment plant. And it can operate, it can be expanded. We've had some very good discussions with their engineer on the facility. Sava and Kathy and I have taken a tour of the facility in the past. They have vertical wells kind of on that little boardwalk connector area that goes from the main Embarcadero area out to the Morro Rock. So they already have the wells in place. They pull that water into their seawater desalination plant and treat it. The idea would be to, you know, try to buy into that plant somehow and then have a treated line that comes all the way up to Cambria. So that, again, that would be one way to avoid having the dogs like I have. There's the dog beach out there. So I think most people know where the dog beach is at. But it's Toro Creek that has an outlet that goes there. The idea there would be to build an onshore RO-type desalination facility and then get your subterranean supply of seawater through either a horizontal directionally drilled well off of some privately held property at this point. We believe Toro Creek would have a paleo channel similar to other creeks where they dump into the ocean. So the concept there is to pull subterranean seawater in, treat it, and then discharge it into an existing outfall pipeline. The old marine terminal has about a 3,200-foot offshore outfall right now. It's currently being used for a treatment process that's going on up in the old tank site where they're treating the groundwater and discharging into that effluent pipeline. And then again, it has a fairly long pipeline of treated water coming up to Cambria. So that was that concept. What we took out of here were some older lines. They had the crude oil loading lines for the old tankers that would go there. This crude oil would come from, I think it was San Ardo, cross country, get stored in the tanks up on a hill there. And they actually had loading pipelines that went about 5,000 feet offshore. Those pipelines are very, very old. We had thought at one time, well, maybe there's a way we could retrofit those and use them for a screened intake. And we just felt like it just doesn't make sense technically. And on top of that, the people who own that property are under pressure to actually get rid of those lines. So those lines have a very limited life to them. So we cut those out. The only one that we saw that might make sense is if, you know, you can somehow use the old outfall pipe. There's still a lot of questions on this one that remain at this point, but that's the gist of that idea. This is getting to what Sava was describing a minute ago about tertiary treatment, advanced treatment, and so forth, but this is the brackish supply system off of San Simeon Creek Road. Again, the district has facilities there. We have potable wells further up gradient or uphill from the perk pond, so the potable supply well field is up here. And then we percolate treated wastewater, require travel time. These rules are changing every year or so. The state will change these rules about how much travel time you have to have between where water is percolated into the ground and where it can be removed. But that was this idea. It's a little bit of a further development from what the district actually studied back in 1990-91. They had a very detailed study going on in that time frame that got met with quite a bit of resistance, actually, over, you know, capacity questions, concerns by agriculture and so forth. But this is treating the water entirely to drinking water level. So the other aside on that is, again, it would have a concentrate return stream that either go into this old pipeline that was built in 1996 that's underneath the seafloor here, or else they work out something with San Simeon CSD and use their wastewater outfall that goes out to sea in this area. The next one is, we call it Whale Rock Reservoir, both with and without Nacio Mineral exchange water. The last time we did some program level master planning, we were of the opinion you'd have to use Nacio Mineral water to exchange for any use of the Whale Rock Reservoir. So the city of San Luis Obispo is the main owner and operator. There's other agencies, of course, that are very involved with Whale Rock, but it would require working out something with the city of San Luis Obispo and say, okay, can we use that reservoir somehow? And if we had to have enough capacity where
we'd have to exchange water. The exchange part of that is you just work on an agreement with the city to say, okay, instead of you relying on so many, say, 100-acre feet of water out of Whale Rock Reservoir, we'll pay you to buy more Nacimiento water. And that's that red line that you see coming down, and their treatment facility is here. So we get some capacity right to Whale Rock that way. Yes, sir. Oh, sorry. Oh, let's wait for Sam so we can hear you. Okay.
What are the costs associated with building a pipeline for the water from Whale Rock?
We're going to get into that at the next workshop. We will. Are you asking me the cost to build the Nacimiento pipeline?
Figure on what it might cost.
I don't have the dollar cost, the construction cost in my head. I want to say it was over $100 million to build that project.
Going to construct the pipeline. Planning level engineering cost estimate, we are going about $10 per inch of pipe diameter per linear foot, up to 25, sometimes can be even more.
$25 a linear foot?
No. $25, 1 inch of the pipe diameter per linear foot. Let's say if you have 10-inch pipe, and if cost configuration and everything is such that requires very expensive piping, let's say $25, that linear foot will cost about $250. Could you understand me?
So in other words, a ballpark is about $250 a foot for the pipeline.
Depends on the pipe diameter. The larger the.
Of course, I just wanted to know.
Yeah, that is. So now you have formula how you can calculate on your own.
So I don't have to calculate.
Right. Yeah. And as we get into the evaluation criteria, you'll see that that is something that is studied in a great deal of detail as well.
Yeah,
and more than one way as well.
Okay.
I'm going to take your comment.
I'm just really frustrated that we're going to spend, you know, an hour or so talking about desalination concepts when they're not going to be approved. They're the most expensive water of any of the other concepts we have listed. And why we just eliminated, we're just talking about the things that you're screening and keeping desalination on the table without using cost as a screening methodology. If cost were to be used as a screening methodology right along with technical feasibility, we wouldn't be talking about these concepts up here right now. We would be talking about conservation and all the other things we should be doing.
And to that point, that's why we're going to try to get to the end of the meeting, because you're going to get a chance to tell us. We just haven't gotten there yet. That's all. We're just not there yet. Mm-hmm. We're trying to do what we were asked to do in March, which was to give you an idea of where our thinking is at this point in time. And at that cost is going to be part of the exercise. That's why you have the dots. Go ahead, please.
Okay. The other part of this, just to complete this description, the without Nacimiento water is an interesting twist in my mind, because with our lowered demands, you know, I mentioned the Water Conservation Act of 2009 lowering our demands, we have 1,230 annual acre feet of diversion permit rights at this point in time. The issue at Cambria is the dry season. You know, we really have problems with meeting that dry season demand, and there's further restrictions on how you can remove water in our diversion permits during a dry season. But if you have a good storage and recovery within a fractured rock formation, would definitely have some advantages as far as avoiding potential issues, because it's all underground. Importing wastewater from San Simeon was brought up. Again, if there was an agreement worked out with San Simeon CSD, maybe we could take some of their untreated wastewater, treat it, and then use it for recycled water for outdoor irrigation. Again, further enhanced conservation practices could involve gray water, rainwater harvesting possibly. We haven't spent a lot of time on this yet. And then it could be combinations of approaches that tie into one of the earlier concepts on these. So at that point, I'll pause again to see if there's any further questions on this part of our presentation before we get into the meat of our today's discussion on developing the criteria.
And it seems like most of the comments and stuff that have been coming up so far are going towards this next part, which is how do we evaluate these different options. I do want to bring up, I rewrote your comment, and I just took it literally what you told me, which was that the public should be at the table. And we agree, and we recognize that if some of you feel that this decision from going to 30 overall concepts, which you have before you, down to 12 concepts was a premature decision. What I would like to encourage you to do is to look through the list. And if you find some idea that you think still has relevance, that you should let us know. If you don't even let us know today, but to write to the district, because we're just working on the evaluation criteria right now. And there may be an idea that we lost in there. So I actually, having thought about specifically what you said, look through the list. I think as you look through the list, you'll see after this discussion, you'll see that some of the ideas just sort of fall out naturally. But if we were too fast and we cut something that you think at least needs to have another look, go ahead and take that another look and let us know what it is. So I hope that helps a little bit. But this evaluation criteria is the heart of this next part of the process, which is no matter how many ideas that we have, no matter how many concepts from 12 to 30 or 40 or 50, it needs to be evaluated in an open, transparent manner that everybody could truly understand. And that's what this evaluation criteria is. And this is your opportunity to weigh in on what you think are the most important criteria that this board should consider when looking at it from a technical level. Yes, sir.
Speaking of criteria, I apologize. I was unable to get here earlier, and there were no more of the lists available. Are there any more anywhere?
Yeah, we'll get you a list, and we'll also get you a couple of dots, because you probably didn't get a couple of dots. Here's a list coming forward. Look at this.
For decades, not in other countries, it is an ADEM. It's a series of small catchments. And the reason why this was rejected is because once in a while, there may be too much water somewhere and somebody might not like it. Well, it seems like, first of all, you've distorted what this meant because you said a dam instead of a whole series of small reservoirs. You haven't included underground tanks or storing the water in tanks, but you've assumed it's going to spread out and intrude on people, and then you've discarded it. And this is one of our best options, and it's not even on the table anymore.
Well, that's why I mentioned that as you look through the list, if you find something that's like that, I think that our team owes it to you to take another look at it. And between now and the July 19th meeting, on any of these ideas that you've come up with, this gap, let us know, and then we'll try to provide you an explanation that is fuller. So as Sava looks, and if it's a series of smaller catchments, what's the viability of the smaller catchments, what's the cost, that sort of thing. So, but yeah, I hear what you're saying, that you know, the company that I work for, we're really big on the community taking ownership of whatever the project is, and if this is something that helps us for you to take ownership, then that's all the better. But let's get to this criteria, because I think this is your way of saying, addressing your question. Your question was, you opposed desalinization, I take it? Am I assuming that's correct?
I don't want to pick the most expensive water project.
Okay. Through this criteria, you're going to find a way of being able to weigh your opinion in and how to avoid that. So go ahead, please. This is Dan.
Hello, everyone. I want to talk a little bit about this methodology that we're going to propose to give you all a chance of seeing and participating in what I would call a very open, objective, and transparent process, okay, for how do you make decisions. Even though you all are not, as was said before, you're part of the decision-making, you're not the decision-makers, but this is a chance for you to help us with the criteria that we'll use to compare these options, these alternatives, these concepts. The method starts with defining criteria. I think you all know what that term means. It's basically metrics that we can compare one concept against another. But because we have multiple criteria, if we just had one criteria, it would be very easy. You know, so that's why we talk about the relative importance of the criteria. And then once we get that, then we need to say, how will we know when we're achieving a specific criteria or not? How well are we doing? So we need some metrics, and I'll go through those. You know, some hard metrics that we can look at. Once we have the criteria, the relative importance, and the metrics, we can put those in a tool. And it's a software package that is not a product of the Corps of Engineers. It's not a product of the consultant. It's a software product that's out there that is used in public decision making, and it's called Criterium Decision Plus. It's a standard method that again, is very transparent, and I'll give you an example. I'll show you an example of how that works. And then we want to make sure that we conduct some sensitivity to these rankings. So, you know, the tool will take input from this group and look at those criteria, look at the relative importance you give it. But then we want to play around with some of the weightings and say, well, you all told us cost was X percent important, but we want to say, well, how would that change if cost was more important or less important? And we want to give you and the board just some perspective on how important that the weighting of the criteria is to the ranking of the alternatives. So I know that's a lot to take in right now, but I'll walk through a very simple example of this process. I know this doesn't look simple, but let me just take let me break it down. It's really seven steps. The first is we take a particular criteria. Let's say it's cost. Okay, cost is seems very important, right, on a lot of people's mind. Okay, so we have cost, and the way we're going to measure cost is by dollars. Make sense? Okay. So let's say we have these bars represent the different concepts that we're evaluating, right? And this particular concept, alternative six, it has a cost of $3 million, okay? So that's fine. It's got a cost of $3 million. You could see relative to the other alternatives, you know, it's at the upper end, right? It's kind of at the higher end. It looks at the range of cost of all the alternatives. So some are, you know, like $1 million, some are $6 million, right? Some are $3 million. And it puts it on a standardized level, and it plots it. And so this alternative of $3 million gets a relatively low score from 0 to 10, okay? Gets a relatively low score. If it was this alternative, it would get a higher score, get a score probably around 8 or 9. Okay, so it's standardized. It puts everything on a score of 1 to 10, right? Even though these units are all different initially. Now, this is what the software does for us, but you'll see how that. Now you have to say, okay, I've got this sort of standardized score from 0 to 10 of 3.4, but how important is cost relative to all the other criteria? Okay, how important is it? And let's say for this particular decision maker, they give cost 9% out of 100% possible, right? So it's not, in this example, not that important, okay? Then you just sort of go through this process where you take this standardized score of 3.4, multiply it by 0.09, 9%, and you get a partial score of 0.31, and you go through here and you plot that. You plot that score, partial score. You do this whole process of step 1, 2, 3, 4 for all of the other criteria, okay? So reliability, water quality, whatever they are, and you go through that whole step, multiplying each. First it gets standardized, multiplied by its weight, and you go through that and you plot those other partial scores, and now you get a total for that alternative, for alternative six, a total decision score. But importantly, you can see how much was due to cost versus water quality versus other things, okay? And then you repeat that whole process for all the other alternatives. So every alternative gets a stacked bar, and now you can see how the alternatives rank and why they rank the way they rank, okay? So again, this is this very transparent process. We like to call this trade-off analysis because I will guarantee you not every concept that was talked about has all advantages or has all disadvantages. Some do things better than others, and there are trade-offs. And that's what we want to show you as the community and the board, what those trade-offs are, because not everything is going to be hunky-dory. Not everything is perfect. If that was the case, we'd all be rich and living in no poverty and all of that. We always have to make trade-offs. Let's say, for example, your most reliable project from a reliability standpoint is also your most expensive option, but there might be an option that you could say, well, you know what? I'm willing to live with a little less reliability because it gives me huge cost savings. but at least you need to see those trade-offs. And that's what we want to try to do with this, is illustrate what those trade-offs are. Because it's important for you all to know what you're giving up or getting for the money that you're spending.
We'll do this gentleman, then I'll come to the back.
This works great with quantifiable, measurable units. My concern would be, what about the units that aren't so easily quantifiable, that somebody's going to say, well, that has a value of X.
Right.
And that may be a subjective value that not everybody in this room agrees with. How do you deal with that?
There you go. And
that's a really great question,
and we'll get to how we deal with some of those qualitative scores. And it's one of the reasons why I like to do sensitivity analysis, because if, for example, there are some criteria that are more qualitative, we can play around with the weights and say, let's give less weights to the qualitative criteria and more weights to the quantitative criteria, and let's see how that changes the decision.
That's right. And then I've got another question.
But that's a very good question. Very good question.
Are the criteria posted on the board the only criteria we will use, and how are they selected?
How are they selected first? Are they the only ones? After you've heard the description of each of those, if we've missed one that you think is important, you'll let us know. If we have to add one, we'll be happy to add it. I think you'll find in many cases some of your questions will be engaged in some of those. But Dan's going to go through each of them pretty specifically. And if we've missed one, we're happy to put a new one up there.
Okay, so the process is this, is that our team collectively with the Corps of Engineers, with the consultant team, with the city, there are numerous water supply efforts going across the whole country. What we did initially is look at what are the criteria that are usually used, right, typically used in an evaluation process like this, from a technical standpoint. And one of the things that you'll see, I'll jump right to it, you'll notice that in this first screening of criteria, that environmental impacts are not on this list as criteria. The reason they're not on this list is because there is a very specific...
that started in March. I'm going to take one more question back here, and then we'll come back. I want to get through at least the evaluation criteria to make sure that we've covered them all. And then if there's something that's missing, we'll deal with it at that time. You had a question.
Yes, this is a clarification question. When we're talking about water supply, are we talking about the present population of Cambria at this time in terms of supplying water to the existing residences? Are we looking at a water supply which would be a backup water supply? And so I just need the clarification.
Good question. We have a very definitive answer for you on that.
So the criteria for this, for the reliability, is for the existing demand and the approved connections. But do you want to speak more to that? Bob?
Yeah, right now the planning is to provide drought protection to the existing customers while also considering the wait list in the future. If you'd like, I can go into a lot more detail on this subject as far as a parking lot item. That's a quick answer. But I can elaborate further if you feel like that is not catching your concern.
Okay, very good.
Okay.
Right.
We have the CCSD waitlist and the existing customers.
Okay. Real brief, and then I want to get into the exercise and give you the information you're going to need to make those decisions.
Yes. Taking the environmental component out at this point is far from being open, transparent with people who live here, because it's only engaging what the state says. It's not engaging what the people in this town feel. So I believe that, and I would want us to, I assume we're going to be voting in some sort of a straw poll. That's what the dots are for. I've got a lot of problems with that. I mean, do we represent Cambrians or don't we here?
And those are where those environmental metrics come into play. But you all will be, you know, part of that as well. It's not to say that you're not going to have any involvement in that environmental.
No, but you're excluding
it. What we're asking right now, here's what we're asking. Just from a technical perspective, how important are these technical criteria in the decision making, how you would rank these projects from a technical perspective? Then there's going to be an environmental process where you get to look at how these environmental metrics are going to be provided and evaluated. Okay, so you're going to see all of the criteria, all of the information. It's just that right now we want to start with just the technical side of it.
Let me interrupt because I really need to get through the criteria. That is our objective today, and let me get to the environmental, the EIS, EIR, why that wasn't one of the initial criteria that was selected. That is because we have to be able to study something. That something has to have a preferred alternative, and then there has to be a series of other alternatives. One of those alternatives that's being considered in the environmental process is no project at all. That's one of the things that's required when you're doing an EIR and an EIRS, an environmental impact report, is to have one option that is a no project option at all. What we really need to do is we need to have something that we have to study first to study against that no build type of a project. So that's why this meeting is focused on really narrow issues, which was you asked us in March to give you an idea of what was the thinking of the different alternatives, and we've done that. And the next thing is to help us to weigh in on how those evaluations are done. Where you see number three up here, that's really what we need from you, is to help us figure out where that weight should go. So I'm not going to take any more questions at the moment because I really need to get Dan to get through those six criteria and then get your input, because that's the productive part of our meeting. That's what's going to really help you out and help us out. So Dan, you want to go through those?
Okay. Okay. Let me just, before I do that, I want to show you how the process ultimately produces a product, okay? Because I think it's important for you to understand how this thing works. So this is an example, a real-world example that I was involved in, where we were looking at four project alternatives. And you can see the criteria here. One was cost. One was the water quality. In this case, it was salinity of the water quality. One was the reliability of the water itself. For example, project one, it was the most expensive project. It had a very small bar for cost. But it was also the most, it was the best in terms of water quality. In other words, this produced water that was very, very low in salinity or hardness, okay? And you see the trade-offs. Here was a project that was very cheap, right? It was very cheap, but it barely made a dent in the hardness of the water. It didn't do a very good job. So, if one person said cost was the most important criteria, well, they would pick project two. If another person said, well, water quality, hardness of the water is the most important criteria, they would probably pick alternative one, okay? If it was just that simple. There are other criteria. Now, look at project three. This is an interesting one. It didn't have the best score in cost. It didn't have the best score in water hardness, but it had a pretty good score almost in everything. And that's why its total score is clearly better than project two or project one. So this is how this tool can help you all see the trade-offs and the decision makers, the board, and the state and the federal interests. It's very transparent, and it's very clear as to what the benefits are, what the costs are. Okay? Does that make sense? All right. So let's talk about the criteria. Before we do that, I want to say there are some standard attributes of good criteria. These probably will make sense to you right away. The first is you have to understand what the criteria is. Okay, that's a pretty good one, right? The second is that they have to be measurable. And they may not be totally quantifiable, but at least if we're going to use qualitative metrics, they have to be something that you can all understand and agree to, right? okay? The third is that they can't be redundant with each other. I can't have something that says cost and then another thing that says water rates, because water rates are really a function of cost. They both are going to measure the same thing. If costs are high, water rates are high, okay? So they can't be redundant. They also have to distinguish between the concepts or the alternatives, okay? And we have to keep them relative concise in numbers. There's a technical reason why that last one is there, but it is the more criteria you have, the more all the concepts will look the same, because there's so many utility factor of 0 to 100%. 100% means it's very, very reliable. 0 means it's very unreliable, and everything in between. And what this is measuring is three separate things. The first is hydrologic variability. What I mean by that is, as you all know, there are some waters, like water coming in from a river, water in a lake, okay, that in some years when it's wet, there's a lot of rainfall, there's a lot of that water. In some years, droughts, that water supply has very little water. So that source has a very wide range of reliability between wet years and dry years, okay? The second is the seasonality of it. And it's very similar to the hydrology, but this case it looks at winter versus summer. So even though you might have a lot of water in the whole year, you might only have it just in the winter months. And if you don't have a place to store the water, then that's not very reliable either, okay? So there's a seasonal component. And lastly, there's an emergency aspect of this. If, for example, the project was located on a fault and that fault was known to have earthquakes, that would not necessarily be a very reliable source of water, okay? So three components: the hydrologic aspect of it, the seasonal aspect of it, and the emergency aspect of it. And those three things will be allowed the engineering team to give the source water a reliability score from 0 to 100%. Now, I'm going to, after each one, I'm just going to ask to see if there's any clarification questions about that particular definition of reliability.
Is that one pretty clear? Excellent. Go ahead, Dan.
Okay.
Oh, real quick.
Hi, my name's Jim Webb. And my question is, reliability is defined as part of our water master plan. The definition that was passed by the board in that plan is different than this. Does this then serve as a revision of that plan or a replacement of it?
No, the master plan usually focuses on adequate capacity, meaning you have the the engineering flow through, whether it's a treatment plant or a pipeline, you have the capacity to serve the water. And all the projects that we're evaluating all have that same capacity. In other words, they all have the same, they're all designed to meet the same demand level. However,
I hear what you're saying. It is true that they have for their master plan one definition. For this technical analysis, it's got a slightly different because it's more focused towards the source water as opposed to the overall deliverability. Yeah. You are correct.
You are correct. The master plan focuses on how water gets delivered and the reliability of the delivery system, and this is focused on the water, the wet water part, right, because the facilities are all going to deliver. Okay.
Very good. I think we've got. Let's. Because I really do want to get to the vote, your input portion of this. So go ahead.
I object to that definition of reliability, on the grounds that if seasonality is a part of it, and you assume that we don't have storage tanks or ponds, you've already ruled out off-stream storage and some other water sources just on that basis. And might end up being not too big of a problem to build a few tanks, but the reliability criteria already rule out those and weight against them.
I think some of the alternatives do have storage. Some of them are not just desalination. Some are looking at, I think, Bob, you talked about one of the projects, taking some water that you have rights to, but you can only take it in the winter, and storing it somewhere so that you have access in the summer. So there are projects like that in the mix.
They would be waiting for, they would get
lower. No. That would be okay. If the project had the storage element, that's why we would say that seasonality is addressed by that storage. However, If we didn't have that storage and you just said, hey, let's divert water from the river here, and you didn't build the storage, then it would get a low weight. Then it would get a low score. So the difference is they're taking a project where that you have rights for the river only in the winter. You divert it into storage. That would then make that score higher.
Ladies and gentlemen, what I need to ask now is that we're really getting close to running out of time. Dan, I'm going to have to ask you to speed up, get through the rest of these. Let's make sure that we've gotten all the criteria that the community is looking for addressed, and then let's get to the assessment, because I think that's the goal here.
Okay, the next one is water hardness and salinity. I think this one would be fairly straightforward. This is going to be measured in what is called total dissolved solids. And really what it reflects is the hardness or the salt content of the water. The reason why that's important to people is because water that's hard water, you all know this, if it's too hard or it's got too much salt content, it erodes your pipes. It burns your cost effectiveness. I think this one is another one that should be pretty straightforward. We're going to look at two things. One is the upfront capital costs. Reason why this is important is because some of those capital costs you could offset from grants and things like that, which reduces the burden on the community, local community. But we're also going to look at the total life cycle costs that also include the operation costs, because usually those you have to pay every year, you as the community. The next one is erosion and storm impacts. I'm not talking about the project's impact on erosion and storm. I'm talking about what would happen if you have a project and there's a storm or sea level rise or something like that, and it could affect the project. So this is where, you know, this is where that comes in. So projects that are more vulnerable to erosion or storm events would get a lower score, obviously, than projects that are not. And then the last one really combines two things: constructability from an engineering standpoint and permittability, meaning how easy it is to secure the public health, the drinking water, the Coastal Commission, all of the permits that you have to go through. And there are a lot of permits that you have to go through. So we look at things like, what's the constraint to the footprint of the facility? If there's a lot of constraints, it wouldn't get a very high score. What is the accessibility for construction? Let's say, for example, the project is proposed in an area where you don't have a lot of access. It's like on a mountaintop, you know, very hard to get to, very hard for the trucks to get up there. That wouldn't score very high. And then I said the permits required. So if it requires 10 permits versus one permit or two permits, you can start to see how that would trade off. So those are the proposed criteria. Again, you know, the environmental are not on there. You have to just trust us that you're going to see that. But for right now, these are the technical criteria. And what we'd like you to do, if there's consensus that these are generally the criteria that would be used to evaluate projects from a technical standpoint, we'd like your help understanding how important these criteria are to you as stakeholders.
Very good. And with that, if there's something that we had missed as a criteria, this is a good time to mention it to us. It may actually be a part of one of the ones that are already up there. If it's something that we had not thought of at all, we'll end up adding it as a new one. So just take a few minutes to do this. Go start here.
Hi, Kathy Seaman. I'm confused between 1 and 5. I'm wondering if the potential storm
impact. So, yes, they're measuring two different aspects of vulnerability. We just placed them in two different spots. It's fine to do that as long as they're not in the same spot, overlapping.
Okay,
did that answer the question? Okay.
Yes, I'm going to go to her first, though, because I saw her hand up first.
Amanda Rice, I just had a question on the cost effectiveness. That's just measured in straight out dollars, or is that measured somehow like dollars per drop or dollars per capita over time?
The reason why we're not looking at dollar per drop is because they're all going to provide the same drop. They are all targeted to be the exact same level of delivery, right? And so,
but if it costs $5 for one type of water from one water source,
yeah.
And $10 per drop from a different water source.
Yeah.
That's
why we just can look at total dollars, because it would give you the same answer. If they were all providing five drops, I could express them as dollar per drop. or I could express them as total dollars, they would be the exact same scale because they all produce 5 drops of water. The only time you would want to look at unit drops, you know, dollars per unit, if they were all providing different levels of drops.
Okay, a couple more.
I want to protest one thing about the criteria. I'm here specifically because 90% of what I believe is important is the environmental impact and the possible damage to the environment. I think a lot of people here who are really active, quote-unquote, environmentalists are here for one reason, to see what the impact will be. You guys are great PR people. I want to comment you on your ability to spin and put all this information together. But nothing has been said about the potential side effects and damages of each project per se. So what I came here to find out, I haven't gotten a thing.
Well, that's right, because that's not this meeting. That's the environmental impact report, the CEQA process, that process. All right, what I'm going to do next is to get to the exercise. And what the exercise is, my little dots went away.
Let's just make sure that there are no more criteria.
All right, what we'd like to try to do, hang on, everybody. What I'd like to try to explain what we're trying to do now is, first, the first question is, we've had a number of comments about the environmental impact report, that process. I hope that we've tried to make it clear that that is a continuing process, and you'll have your opportunities to weigh in. At this time, we don't have a project to study. We need to figure out what those projects are through this process. And when we get to the environmental process,
this is just a very small group out of the community, and as has been noted, my two major concerns, which are cost and environment, are not even being discussed. We don't even have numbers. We talk about cost effectiveness, and we don't have any numbers.
Well, and we don't have numbers because we haven't been able to evaluate, because we're trying to figure out how important cost effectiveness is to the overall project evaluation. Does that make sense? We need to figure out how to churn all of these. If you have your hand up, put your hand down, because I'm just going to talk for a moment, just to try to clarify. Okay, here we go. I've got a bunch of oranges. I've got a bunch of lemons. In order to get this all to work, I have to compare them as apples to apples. We have to come up with some sort of a qualitative way and a quantitative way of being able to judge all these various concepts to figure out which ones rise to the top and which ones don't rise to the top. Once we've been able to establish which ones rise to the top and which ones fall, we'll be able to study them through the environmental impact report process, the CEQA process, and the federal NEPA process. We'll be able to evaluate what their impacts are going to be on the environment. But as of right now, we don't have anything that we can study because we haven't selected which one of these concepts is the leading concept. You asked about how the community is going to weigh in. You asked us in March to come back and give you kind of an idea of at least what our thinking is. We've tried to do that. As far as the weighing in today, what you're doing is you're providing us input, but you're not the only ones, because if you look around the room, this is not a representative sample of the community. It's a self-selected sample. You know, we know that, and we can't say what you are saying and extrapolate it and say that this is the rest of Cambria and this is what the rest of the residents say. What we can do, though, is we can give you information. You can inform us by giving us what you believe are the different criteria that you feel are most important. The board will do the same exercise. State law, federal law will also weigh in, because there's only certain things that you can do through state and federal law. And also best professional practices will weigh in. What's the state of the art of thinking right now with water quality, water delivery, water reliability? All those will also come into play. You're one of the inputs that will be used. You're not the definitive input, but I think all of you would agree this isn't the entire community sitting in the room. But you're very, very important, and that's one of the reasons why the board did this as a formal meeting, because they wanted to be able to hear and see what you are saying. And what the exercise is you should all have blue dots. If cost is to you the most important one, the cost effectiveness, put all three of your blue dots on there. The yellow dot is your secondary concern. Which one do you think is important but isn't as important as the blue dot? So you could conceivably, if there is one of the criteria that is so important to you, you could stick all six dots on there. What we're going to end up with is going to have a graphic presentation of at least the general thinking of the people who are in this room, who are probably more informed than the rest of the community at this point because you've sat through this meeting, and that's terrific. And what we're also doing is we're asking the people that are online to also weigh in as well, and they've been given a little sheet. It doesn't have quite the flexibility you have. We're going to have our team experts on the back as well, so that if you have a technical question about what the criteria means, then we're going to be able to address that on a one-on-one level.
And I'll put the
level.
Definition back up here. When
and
you're
yeah, put
it.
The definition back up there. That would be great. So what my question to the audience now is there a criteria? Your public participation one, I accept as a public participation guy. I always love that as a criteria. My hope is that this meeting is getting it there. Is there a criteria that you believe is missing? And if it's missing, we'll either tell you that it actually is up there. It just wasn't evident.
I would like the criterion to be explicit that the board of this group adopted. And that is, and I'm just checking, are you telling me that all of these criteria are to produce 220 acre feet per year for the Cambria Community Services District, which is the official number chosen by this board? So when I determine cost effectiveness, I have to evaluate how effective is this whatever device in producing 220 acre feet per year.
Okay, that's a good question. Let me see if somebody has the answer to that one. That looks like a solid question. She wants to know what is, as you said, the drop
what's the
by
target?
Drop.
What's the target demand?
Yeah, I think that's coming out again, probably out of our, okay. That was discussed during our April board meeting, I believe, and I think that was a minimum number, as I recall, of either 220 or 240 that was suggested by the board back then. Again, the technical team at this point would suggest a wider range than just 220 as far as looking at different alternatives because there may be some trade-offs. And we can get into that. I can put that into the parking lot and come back and discuss it in detail if you like. I still have some of the slides that I can show from that April board meeting.
And here we get to choose only between the final two or the final six. And they aren't even self-evident in their meaning. And you can tell I'm not exactly the most laid-back person all the time. I honor your work. I respect your work. But now that we are having a workshop and asking questions about what it is that you all decided, we are being forced to look at the clock and put up dots.
Okay, good. Okay.
You have a question about the criteria. This will be the last question I'm going to take before we start the exercise. Actually, I'm going to have you wait because this gentleman hasn't spoken before. Let's get you in on the discussion.
I sort of agree with what she said. The concern I have is that, for example, cost. And you may have, say, you have 20 projects on the list. Are all of those that are approved within the parameters that the district can afford? Number two, you're talking about water quality. Are all of those quality producers of water that are sufficient for our area? Are we considering factors, for example, emergency conditions? We don't want to have a facility built on a fault that's going to cause a quake. So have we eliminated all of the projects that in and of themselves are not feasible?
Let me see if I can answer that, okay? Because there are relative trade-offs to everything. Like I said before, there is no perfect project out there. If there was, we would have been able to define it, show it to you, and you would have all said, yes, absolutely, let's go. There is no perfect project. Every project has trade-offs. Every single project has trade-offs. Now, for example, yes, we would obviously try not to build a project on a fault line, right? That would be ideal. But what if a project is somewhat near a fault line? We don't know the exact probability of an earthquake. There are houses that are built on fault lines. We have to make trade-offs. We have to make decisions. That might be one trade-off. If you think that's very important, put a lot of weight on that criteria. If you think absolutely, by God, I don't want to have that risk, I'm risk-averse, right? I don't want to have that. I'll give you a perfect example. Reliability and cost. You guys all buy cars, right? There is a perfect trade-off between reliability and cost of a car. Generally, those cars that get the highest safety ratings and all of those tend to have some more cost than cars that don't. There's a trade-off. You have to make that trade-off. That's what we're asking to do. We just want... Okay, so what?
Which one's unclear?
Which ones do you not understand, and we can elaborate them?
Do people understand
Which one do you not understand?
There's two of them.
Okay, what are they?
The water hardness. That means okay. that if you think that's important, that the best one has to be D-cell. That's already built into the question.
No, that's not true.
That's not true.
You did. What it means is for the long-term health of the district, if there is a high level of salinity in the water, it will do damage to both the district's pipes, so they're going to have to replace those pipes more frequently, and it's going to damage the pipes that are within your home, which means as a homeowner, you may have to replace the pipes more frequently as well, and that would increase your overall cost over the lifetime. So it's all about how much stuff gets clogged up in the pipe, basically.
Okay, but obviously D-cell will take the most of it out. I have another question.
Wait, I got to hang on for a second. Okay, you know what? I'm going to, as the facilitator, first of all, we're hitting 3 o'clock. The meeting was supposed to run from 1 to 3 o'clock. So I'd ask the permission of the group, can we stay a few more minutes so we can get this input? Thank you. All right. Somebody said no. You know, we could do this. If the overall group feels that this exercise is a pointless exercise, then we just don't need to do it. And then we just leave it. And if we don't do this, what we do is that the board, working with the rest of the team, will do the evaluation, and it will try to determine what the weights are. And this will be your opportunity to say that you have issues with the overall process. I'd like to ask everybody to go ahead and put their hands down, because I learned a long time ago that when your hand is up, your ears tend to not listen. Because what I'd like to try to accomplish is, you told us in March that you wanted us to go through and show you where some of these ideas were. You also wanted to participate in the process, and that the process that the board has selected was this evaluation process. And we're asking you as community members, what do you think are the most important things? Now, one thing that we have learned today is one of the most important things. I respect you. Please respect me by listening to me, please. Thank you. The idea here is that what we want you to do is to help us figure out, from your point of view, which of these criteria is most important. We do hear, and we do want you to do, is to tell us what's most important. Is it cost effectiveness? Because there's an assumption that's being made, and there's an assumption I think that you're making, which is that this group is trying to push one solution. That's not the case. This group is trying to create a process that allows everybody to see what's happening in a transparent manner with information that can be shared amongst all of us. That's what we're trying to accomplish. With that, what I'd like to do is, if you want to boycott it, that's just fine. You know, you're just going to leave the decision making to them anyways. But I think that there's an opportunity for you to weigh in as a community to tell us what you think are the most important ones that are up there. And if there were particular specifics, if there's one that's missing, that's all I'm asking for. I hear the environmental one. We've talked about that one because that's in a different process. Just tell me quickly, what's the criteria that it's missing? It may actually be included in one of these definitions.
Integration level with the current, what we currently have for our infrastructure, how easy is it to have an interface?
That's a good one.
That's a good one. We like that. Does that fit in one of our criteria that we have now? Would that be cost effectiveness?
I would say it would probably, if we were to add it, it would probably go into, I don't know, it sounds like it would be its own category, to be
okay.
honest with
so that's
you.
A good one. So I'm going to put I'll put a sheet up there. So what do we want to call that
integration
one?
With existing
integration,
system.
Okay. Existing, okay. Yeah. What else do we have? That's a good one. Thank you. Appreciate that.
I feel like we're being treated like cattle in a chute getting ready for the slaughter. We did not give you any direction in March to go in. So you're misdescribing the March scoping session. At the March scoping session, we basically said desalination and its concepts were not even something that we were expecting at the March scoping session. So I think that's been mischaracterized. To say that environmental is going to be judged later on is not true. Tom Lester even said in Coastal Commission hearings that just because something's technically feasible doesn't mean it's feasible. So to just have one set of screening right now where you're just talking about technical feasibility is not adequate, especially for a community that values environmental over all of these other criteria that you have just made up. Steve Figler was right when he also said that it's Cambria residents that have to vote here.
It's Cambria residents that are paying the rates. So this room is also has people in here who do not vote here, who, and so that there's no definition of, there's no separation of dots of different colors for people who don't vote here versus people who do vote and rate here. The display and the your PowerPoint also.
Integration. Is there another criteria that you believe that is missing that other than environmental?
Well, you took it right out of my mouth. I think the environmental should be on here, if for nothing else than the perception of fairness. Whenever we're going to, whenever we start making choices, we shouldn't separate something that's so important in this community as environmental. Put it up there, and we'll make our decision on it.
That's good. You know what? I'll do that. I'll put integration because that was one of those, you hope that you get it all, but that was a good one that you didn't. I'll put environmental up there. Just understand that, that's not necessarily going to help the board as they still have to come up with the weighting for this system that they've adopted. So do you have something that's missing?
Fuel consumption is missing. Fuel consumption. Not really. It's not all about the cost of fuel, it's the consumption of fuel.
About the carbon footprint. Well, that would also get evaluated in the environmental impact process as well, too, both pre- and post-construction. What is missing?
Two things are missing from the criteria. This is Valerie Bentz. One of them is, can the technology provide employment for local people to make it? And the second one is, Will this technology or will this project help further the integration and harmony among Cambrians?
The integration on a technical level we got. All right, and does it provide local jobs as a criteria? Okay, here's the last question we got. Oh, good, environmental, and we got to get integration up there too, Sava.
Thank you. I agree with the. Can you hear me? I agree with the woman down at the end. I think energy is an important factor for long-term impacts of the project. However, I think it's really insulting to the landowners here, who are being treated like we don't have a say in this. Even though we don't live here currently, we certainly do pay property taxes, and we certainly are affected by the circus environment that's put on out here. And I think it's just ridiculous the type of behavior that I've seen today from the audience. With we've got professionals who've opened up a wide range of alternatives, are being adult about trying to find a wide range of alternatives. After all these years, no one's stuck on desal. We're looking to find solutions here. And if you keep throwing rocks, you're never going to be satisfied. I think the people who want the no project alternative should just raise their hand and say so.
Okay, very good. Should fall into one of our existing categories? Is that something different?
Let me just say this. Just everybody's attention. Now that we've added environmental, what I would recommend, if you're putting weight to that, consider things like the following. Impacts on, the habitats, the carbon emissions, all of those things that you would consider to be environmental impacts, put that under environmental. The cost of fuel is reflected in our cost effectiveness because it's part of the O&M cost. It's part of the operating cost, which is energy cost. So if you believe costs are going to increase, if you think fuel costs are going to increase, well, there's two aspects of O&M. There is...
It's not the cost of it as a dollar cost. It's the fact that some alternatives require a huge consumption of energy and others don't. I think that's an important distinction. It's not just a dollar's cost. It's an energy usage.
Yeah, and if your concern is more of the energy usage, not necessarily the dollar, put it in the environmental category. That's all I'm saying. Put it in the environmental category.
So if I understand that right, it's the kind of act local, think globally kind of.
Right.
If you want to take the. Okay.
I'm just saying there are some alternatives that require a lot of energy,
right,
and a lot of reliability, and a lot of hookup to the grid or what have you, and others that, that are a little more passive in terms of energy usage. And
okay.
That's separate from environmental
right.
cost.
So I think we've got that captured. So once again, what we've got is reliability of water, source water, the water hardness and salinity, proven technology, let's not experiment on the community, cost effectiveness, capital cost, and over the lifespan of whatever the project is, the erosion storm drains, constructability and permits. We've also added environmental and we've added integration with the existing system, and I think we might have one more.
One key factor, especially that would be important for the folks here representing the landowners waiting for a water meter, is implementation time. In any project, if you don't consider the time of implementation, when the due date is, this can go on forever, and it has been for how many years? We've been talking about this for 20 years.
Does integration fit into one of those?
I would add that as part of constructability. Just add that as it is. It's part of how long does it take to
from the day I say go to the day we turn the switch. That's what you need to know.
I think the reason that he might be mentioning constructability, and I would agree in this case, it's a lot of that's going to be required.
Say yes.
That's
right. Absolutely.
Very good.
Absolutely.
Very good. All right. So you have your blue dots. You've got your yellow dots. The blue ones are the primary, what you want. You can spread them out. You can hook them all on one of them. Let's go ahead and start this exercise. We'll have some of our folks in the back if you've got any questions. I'd like to try to do this in the next 5-7 minutes. You can barter with each other on your dots. If you're boycotting it, I'd like to suggest that you go over by the coffee bar. If you're participating, belly on up to the boards, and let's get this.
Sam, can you hear me?
Once again, if I can have your attention, please, if you're in the middle of a conversation, I would suggest just to go stand towards the back so everybody else could hear. Once again, may I have everybody's attention? What I'd like to try to do, I think everybody, for the most part, you know, it's not easy when you get fewer dots than you have choices, isn't it? But then that's the sort of compromise that has to go through this entire process. So here is what we've got. Everybody ready? First of all, I want to thank all of you for your patience through this process and your input, and I think that hopefully you saw that you've added things. I you know, the environmental we heard, the fact that we're dealing with this I think is great. The integration, you try to think hard about all the different criteria. The local knowledge is really important. I was glad to see that. So let's go through these. The reliability of the source water. Reliability source water scored very, very high. That would seem to make a lot of sense. Obviously, the people who have had to replace their pipes with the salinity of the water have voted for the water hardness. And this is very much reflected of your unique special conditions, the way your water comes to you as it is, because it's an overall problem. The proven technology. It looks like, from what I can gather in this, don't experiment on our community. Use something that we know that has worked before. I had to see that one score very high, and score very high as one of the primary considerations. I think on a fiduciary level, from the board point of view, this is going to be very important. Erosion and storm impacts, it's one of those kind of, you've got to score it. It's an important criteria, but it's an important criteria when, you know, the ocean rises 18 inches, all of a sudden becomes a much more important issue because it's a long-term issue. But I'm glad that a few folks had noticed this and put some comments. Constructability and permits went to the question of could it be built and how long, the implementation. Because a lot of the implementation is going to be done through A lot of the implementation is going to be done through the permitting process. So, for instance, any project that has to deal with the Coastal Commission and everybody else is going to take a little bit longer. So this I see as the implementation. Of course, this does not surprise me now that we've put this up here, which is to try to find a project that has the least amount of environmental impact on the community, that has the least amount of impact on the community and an environmental community, because you want to protect what is, I believe you all believe, is your greatest resource, which is the beautiful place that you live, that whatever the project is, it's something that balances off what it's going to do to the earth, what it's going to impact on the earth, both in a local level
and in a global level, how much fuel are we consuming, that sort of thing. Are we good stewards of the environment? Are we leading the way as a community through the solution of this process? So that's the way I'm interpreting environmental. Did I just get a thumbs up? Oh, wow, that's going. I could go home now. That's great. Thank you. So hopefully that's bored, not me speeding up. But the environmental, and then remember the environmental impact report and the environmental impact study will also look in, even if one of these scores as the number one, this is the solution, it could fail in the environmental impact report because it's just too onerous. And then integration with existing systems. I love this because this is pure reflection of local knowledge. We tried really hard to think of everything, but we didn't think of this, and this is a very important one. So, and it didn't fit in any of our categories. So I appreciate that, and I'm glad to see some folks supported that. Did everybody vote? Is there any last-minute ones? We got the online. Okay. All right, so I'll give you what we had. One person online, they put as their number one cost-effectiveness, constructability, and reliability, and then proven resources, water hardness, and integration. So that's what we got online as our one. Does anybody have any, before I get to any final comment, back again, and we're going to show you what the outcome of this process is, because you're one of the inputs, and you're a very, very important input. Obviously, you've added a couple of criteria, so a really important input. And we'll come back to you, and we'll try to verify that the weighting system works, and we'll bring you other additional details. Also, if you found something on the list of 30 that didn't match the 12 that made it through, and I had a couple people give me some notes to that effect, look through the list and write to the Water District and let us know, because over this next month, we might be able to go back and reevaluate some of those options. The one that came up with the, it looked like it was just one dam, and it could be a sequence of dams. We'll take another look at that one again. And if there's any of the others that are on the list that you thought need a second look, let us know what those are. The team feels pretty confident that they really narrowed the list down to good, viable alternatives. But once again, there might be one that's missing in there. You at least have the list of the universe. That way, there you're part of the process. Are there any other final? So once again, July 19th, put in your calendar, 1 o'clock, right? Same thing. And then the regular board meeting on the 26th. Last questions or comments? Yes. Yeah, let's get this.
Make sure that all the presentations are posted as soon as possible on the CCSD website. It took almost a month to get the concepts posted at the website last time. And I want to make sure that you're looking also at projects that start with 50 acre feet of water to, you know, 220 is way too much. So 50 acre feet and multiple projects should be considered.
Good. Very good. Yeah, so whoever's doing the technology part of this, let's make sure we get that all up as quick as we can.
Sam? Sam, before you finish,
yes,
I want to make sure the audience understands, we would like a few minutes for clarification from the board's perspective.
Excellent.
So when you're done.
Very good. I think I have, maybe two more questions?
We have a project cooperation agreement that says that the Army Corps and the federal authorization is for a desalination facility. We do not have any change to that, and that could take years, and that should be factored in, because I'm sure Cambria is expecting any desalination facility to be paid by the federal government.
I think that would come under constructability and permittability. Okay. And one last one before we go to the board. Okay.
Hello. For those that are still here, can I just hold that? we noticed that erosion impacts did not get a very high score. And one of the questions we heard today, which I thought was a really good one, was, this seems to have reliability implications, meaning if the project's vulnerable to... As is. I just wanted to check to see if that was something okay. Thank you.
All right. Final comment or question before we get to the board for there. So everybody grab a seat, because we're going to be here for another few minutes.
Just real quick, quickly. I was wondering if the Army Corps of Engineers is still
We can be here as long as we need to be.
Sell or with other... is the money still there in Washington?
The question came up with regards, is the money still there for desalinization? The partnership or other jurisdictions? Other alternatives? Is the money still there? That's good. Okay, so is the money still there for desalinization? I believe that because the Army Corps has a representative, the partnership still continues.
But that will become one of the that's part of the criteria of where the funding is coming from. If it's coming locally, is it coming from other sources? So that will be part of that mix. So with this, I'd like to formally turn the meeting back, and I thank you all very much for your participation. One thing I love coming up here is I am never afraid of having a spirited discussion with the community because you all care, and I like that. It's better than coming to places where there's two people in the audience and they just want to sit and listen to you. So I like this engagement. This is great, and you really did help us out. This is really good information that will help us with that process. With that, I'd like to formally finish my part and turn it to the board.
Thank you very much, Sam, and Army Corps generally. A lot of things that were conducted here we heard for the first time, as you did. And a couple right off the beginning, there was a question of funding. Army Corps of Engineers signed an agreement after a $10.3 million appropriation fostered by Congresswoman Capps in 2006. There was an additional fund of roughly $3 million appropriation for the research that was done over the past years, and someone mentioned, I think Mary, saying millions of dollars were spent, and that's true. It's been an ongoing proposition for 20 years. So that $3 million was appropriated for our benefit. We did, in fact, have a responsibility for a 75-25 sharing of cost. 75 federal, 25% would come from the community. And in 2009, we had stimulus funds that allowed us then also to fund the additional, and it would not be. It would have to be renegotiated with WERDA. It would have to be a new project definition. Not that it couldn't be done, but in a sense it was in 2006 awarded for a desalinization solution. We are frustrated for 20 years as stakeholders in not having water. I know there's 665 people or groups of people that own properties in the wait list that are frustrated as well. I know that the Army Corps has a process, and it's a very laborious one, very, very difficult to do quickly. This year, we instituted an alternate water subcommittee that looked at, I heard the comment, do you have to have 220? Remember, just a short time ago, it was 600 acre feet. And that was a projection made based on 1999 facts by Kennedy Jenks that extrapolated what would be needed to satisfy that number of people on the wait list. Obviously, it's very difficult to do that, and it turned out to be overstated. And as a board looking at current data, looking at very accurate 12 years of data by our water supervisor, I might add, Jim Adams, that we saw that we weren't using anywhere near what was projected as a demand, as a need. And as a result, we reduced the number down to 220 as a minimum, 220 acre feet per year as a minimum. Now, that is not saying that now we have we have to find the resource that is 220 acre feet in capacity. It could be 50 acre feet. I think this was mentioned already. It's the integration, if you will. Certainly in 5 years, you don't need 220 acre feet. If we plan that build out over a 30-year period, you need a finite amount as we would progress towards that endpoint in 30 years. So 50 acre feet may be adequate for 10 years of effort of production of water meters. So from that standpoint, we have the ability in this ad hoc committee to look at every alternative, to provide us with alternatives. At that point, and with obviously input on our monthly meetings, we get input of similar or maybe on a minor scale compared to what you all have seen today. of what your feelings are. And we've responded to them, and we've actually taken those suggestions and used them in many ways. But we are looking at alternatives that may be very, very small in size, or they may be significant. But we do have that ability to look at places where the Army Corps is not looking at the present time. I must admit that from a business background, I am absolutely frustrated by the fact of where we are today. And I know that would go down very hard to the people that have presented their case to you this afternoon. But I am disappointed, and I do believe the community is disappointed. They've been disappointed for many years. And our goal is that we do not want to separate from the Corps, but we want to make a solution happen. So all I can say to you, there's a parallel path going on here. It's not a divergent path, but it's one to, as quickly as possible, satisfy. And those criteria are good. There's no question about that. One of the absolute stoppers is environmental. I mean, literally every proposal that we'll present will be attacked from the environment. I think also that this group is more or less made up of a bias, and that is to move away from DCEL. And we aren't saying that that's good or bad. So stay tuned from the board standpoint, and stay tuned for the core standpoint, and may both of us win at the end of the day. And at that point, I'd like to just maybe have other board members, and if the general manager wants to jump in as well, of what your thoughts are. Director Cliff.
Yeah, my thoughts are similar frustration at the process. So I still want to keep this meeting open for public comment to really tell this board what you want. Because I don't care, as a board member, I don't care how the numbers come out on this system. I'm going to do something that makes sense to this community, that can get things moving, that can do it with the environmental aspects that are acceptable to this community, and within a time range that can do it. And if it's a fragmented multiple projects, that's fine, because again, I don't believe that we necessarily have to have the solution today for 30 years from now. Very few people pay for their house with cash. They pay for it over a period of time, and I think that's something that can be done here too. Whether it's a project that can give us a conservation project, it can give us 25 acre feet in the next couple of years, let's do it. If it's a simplified reverse osmosis system on our current out at our current pond. Right now, we give you water free out of that portable water supply. There's no reason why you couldn't hook that up to an RO system that could make it cleaner than the water we deliver to you through the regular pipe system. And that might be 50 acre feet, and that's fine. That gets us another 5 or 10 years down the road. So I get really frustrated at the big project idea that we're locked into right now. And I want you to know that there are other activities going on. We are searching other areas, and we will continue to search those areas and see what we can. And I, as far as I'm concerned, the meeting can stay open as long as you want it to stay open to serve whatever your needs are and give us the ideas, because apparently we're going to make that final decision, and I'll just wait and see what you have to say.
I agree entirely with Mr. Cliff's position. I think that we have an opportunity now to for people to vent or to discuss anything they want. We don't want to herd people. I tend to think that there was a little frustration, and if you have an opportunity to that you want to talk about it, you should. I'm very happy that the environmental board is filled up. In my opinion, I want to make sure that anything we bring into this town is very environmentally friendly, because that is a key issue for this community, and I appreciate that. I also see reliability very high on the list, and it's going to be a hard thing to come up with a compromise, but I think we should. And I do think that for those things, we need to do that. Even if we reject the cost, at least we got a number that we can deal with. So I'm still energized in a way, but I really would like to get feedback from the people as they need to. And we're open as long as I've been here after 5 before, and I'm glad to stay here again.
Director Robinette.
Thank you. I certainly agree with the members of the board. And I think, actually, for everyone here, that we're all here with good intention, that it was a bit frustrating today. Your questions were brilliant. Your call for clarification comes from everyone here takes this very seriously. You've done a lot of your research, too. I had many of the same questions that you raised. Sometimes I think the frustration was we weren't getting just a straight, simple answer to the question. And that is so important to everyone here. But I also appreciate that when that didn't happen, you brought it up again, and I think that's how we have to do things. I am feeling energized. I am feeling positive. I think people here want a solution. And it seems that solution, we know sometimes we've been working for many years on what we thought would be the solution. It seems that people are open, willing to listen to each other, and that is a key. The encouragement is to hear everyone, and that everyone is heard with respect. And I think that's when we begin to find some of the best thinking, creative ideas. And we have talked about this. We talked about this last time, too. We're not going to have an ultimate solution anytime soon. On the other hand, I believe that everyone here is ready to have something thoughtful and something right be a step in a direction. We can't, of course, keep on like this. And that's going to come through cooperation. That's going to come through compromise. But I just wanted to say thank you to everyone that's here. And we do want to hear your ideas on solutions. So thank you.
Looks like we've generated some new interest. An interesting fact, you know, is to build up on what was already said, that for 30 homes, we're talking a very small, if we're going to build a podium.
Thank you, and I'm still an optimist. I mean, we're not going anywhere. So, you know, the environmental community is still here. We're still ready to talk. We're still ready to sit on any kind of a committee you want to form of community residents, maybe a couple of people on the wait list, you know, but it has to be decided. What does that stakeholder group look like? And people need to be able to agree, like so many people should be, you know, coming forward with good ideas of, first of all, you know, making sure the numbers are right, which, you know, the frustration level for most people that are really informed in Cambria is that the numbers have not been right. The water master plan is not right. Cindy Hawley was right and is being charged a lot of money for being right. So we all know now that water master plan is not right. And so the naysayers, of which I guess I'm proud now to be one of the naysayers, that have been saying for year after year after year and asking questions year after year after year, about that water master plan, that we were that the 602 acre feet is way too much water. We don't need 602 acre feet. We do know we need these habitat studies and in-stream flow studies. The recommendations by the Coastal Commission are the same recommendations that they have been giving for 20 years. They have not changed. What is now changing now is the board up here, and I'm happy to see it, and I'm totally willing and ready to help find some kind of a water project. I'm not against all water projects. I'm not against growth, but we can't be letting out a couple of intent to serves here and there on the hopes we're going to get some big water project later on either. I think the whole idea of releasing intent to serves until we're sure what we're doing is a bad idea. We need to stop promising that some people are going to grow. If you give out 3 intent to serve letters, then you're going to have 689 people on the water wait list ready to sue you because they're all going to want to grow right now. I think that's it.
You don't expect us to agree with you, do you?
Yeah, actually, I have a lot of good research, so you might as well.
By the way, would you exclude from desal from your list that you'd be willing to talk about?
Am I excluding desalination from my list?
Yeah. I would like to talk about.
You can. Why waste the time talking about it? We have been talking about desalination for 20 years. From a cost standpoint, it is ridiculous for a town of 60. Has estimated per acre feet, we're looking more like $3,000 to $4,000 an acre foot, and that will be coming to you soon. Thank you.
Bring it on. Next, Crosby Schwartz.
Yeah, I just wanted to repeat my comment from earlier that I was quite disappointed to see that all of the seasonal storage options have been taken off the Army Corps list. I mean, I've talked to a number of people in CCSD, one of the directors, and this certainly seems to have potential for meeting our water needs from the existing wells for many, many years. And I think that should be definitely put back on the list. And there's many ways to store water. It's not rocket science. It can be done in multiple sites if that's appropriate. But basically, the water is there. We just need to be able to store it.
It's on our list.
Okay, good.
John Terwilliger. All new names. It's good.
Thank you for this opportunity. I was a little disappointed in the presentation to do today as well, simply because we were given a list of things to select for that perhaps we didn't feel should have been on the list, or the list wasn't wide enough for whatever reason. The bottom line is you've got an engineering firm. They're going to look at elegant engineering solutions. That's what they do. I've been working with engineering groups for 40 years. And been an international project manager, know how all this stuff works. And if you're a carpenter, you've got a hammer, gosh, everything starts to look like a nail after a while. So I'm looking at that one point that says proven technology. And I can't think of a better technology than a dam. You know, they've been working for an awful long time, and they allow us to capture seasonal runoff. If it's not a dam, then yes, multiple individual smaller storage units, absolutely appropriate. Is there water just running off into the ocean? Of course there is. We see it every winter here. Why can't we capture it and use it for probably years, not just 1 year? It can go on, change this community, because it will continue to die, and our individual rates will continue to go up and up and up. We need to spread the pain over a larger resource, a larger community. I'm really frustrated with what I've been reading in the paper. We bought our home here in 2009, and it's been extremely frustrating seeing and understanding what's going on. Why we didn't hold Standard Oil accountable the day that disaster happened that caused us to be having to sit here today, and why that wasn't a done deal at that point is a mystery that I'm sure someone could explain to me, but I don't know what it is today. But when I see standing water sitting on the road into Cambria in that cow pasture off to the right for 4 months out of the year, there's a lake there, and we're being told there's no water? There's a lake on the other side of the road that's fed by a stream that washed out the road last winter, if you'll remember, right? Huge amounts of water coming in, going down Santa Rosa Creek out to the ocean. This is common sense. To me, this is just common sense, and it's extraordinarily frustrating to say that the only solution is to reverse osmosis, pump seawater forever. It's nonsense. It'll kill us. I'm sorry, I'm talking too long. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Bob Chuowski? I'm sorry. What is it really?
And that's how you say Chukowski.
Oh, that's
Chukowski.
Better, yeah.
All right.
An extra 3 minutes.
I want to thank the Corps for the presentation. About 3 years ago, my good wife got involved in trying to have a community education meeting, and it was held at Rabobank. And, in fact, CCD. The director, McKinnon, was there, and I appreciate you coming to that meeting because it was an education meeting. What I'm sad about this meeting that happened today, that it didn't happen 6 months after that. That the education process that took place today was a valuable one, mm-hmm. I think. And it is frustrating that there is a happened to us, too. I think there are some smaller solutions, and I'm glad you're going to look at them because I think the people that have been on that water list forever deserve some possibility of a future to end. I don't see the community turning into a San Luis Obispo or any huge population. I don't want that. I don't want that to happen.
No one does.
But we do need to stay alive. And I think there is that the people that have been on that water list, they sort of made a contract to that they had a wish to become Absolutely. Part of our community. Mm-hmm. So, again, I would congratulate the Army Corps for what they're doing. Don't forget the small stuff, too, in the process of looking at what you're going to look at. I do think that it's not a possibility in some cases for having us all have a local contractor come in and fix, because some of the technology we're talking about is sophisticated.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Jeannie Jacobs. Oh, I think I've read that. Jeanine.
Yes, it's Jeanine. Thanks. Okay. The quality of water. Great water has a charge to it, and it's the charge from, you know, the sky, and it comes in the rain. When you over-filter water, you can actually make water bad for you, as we know with distilled water. So my preference, of course, is the water catchment, which goes into the storage wells, and I think a multiple area of water catchment would, of course, give you a lot of quantity and might be better than the reservoir, not the reservoir, but the extra wells near San Simeon. It's a great multiple, I say the more the better, you know. But the fuel consumption for the water catchment is nil. The fuel consumption for trucking water probably would be high, but not as high as desal. Way to go in the meantime, and I don't know how the funding would be. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeanine. Amanda Rice.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I'd first like to thank the board for actually doing some leading today, and I appreciate the additional time that you want to take to listen to what the community who took the time to come down to the meeting has to say, especially after all of the details that were going on. I would like to reiterate, I think that looking at whether or not we actually need additional water and how reliable is how important is the reliability, if you look at the water master plan, if you look at the urban water management report, they both of them say that except for years where there's more than 2 years of no recharge, which in over 100 years has not been ever the case that there hasn't been any recharge, it's 95% reliable when there's no recharge for 2 years. But otherwise, we pretty much have the water we need. And I think that's an important thing to keep in mind. The other thing I'd like to say is I appreciate what the previous speaker said about when you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. State of the art in the water industry right now is less about engineering new supply and more about managing the resources that already exist in terms of doing water recycling and dealing with wastewater. And the last thing I'd like to say is I'd like to tell a story that Jerry Levitz once told me when I was on the North Coast Advisory Council about undergrounding the utilities on Park Hill. He and another person from the NCAC, I don't know, probably 5 years before I even joined the NCAC, so maybe 2000, went to every house on Park Hill and said, hey, you want your utilities undergrounded? And every single one of them said, oh, yeah, that'd be awesome. So they went and spent a lot of time with PG&E and tried to figure out how to get it done. And they went back once they had the numbers of how much it was going to cost each homeowner. And guess what? They knocked on every door again. And you know what happened? They opened the door. They said, oh, it's going to cost me that much. Never mind. They're fine where they are.
Thank you, board, for giving us some extra time to share our ideas. I've already made a pitch for the small catchments and water storage idea that was crossed out by the initial study. I hope it will be brought back in. There are local experts who have studied it, such as Dr. Brownell, and I hope you'll invite him to talk with you about it. But I'd also like to give a pitch for reinstating the conservation. Well, I think you used to give rebates or some kind of benefits for people who installed low-flow toilets and low-use washing machines, and those went away a few years ago. If there's any way in the budget that you can put those back in,
they're back.
They are.
They're in spades.
Okay, I'm going to go look at that. But things like that, maybe even helping us, some of us put in local gray water for our yards. Those little things would go a long way to bring our community together, to work together on this. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Elizabeth Bettenhausen.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I sat down as soon as the news release came out from CCSD regarding this meeting and read it carefully, and then I sat at my dear computer, which I love as many people love their high-tech stuff these days, and I had the conversation with the computer, and I have three questions initially. One, what does the adjective technical mean? That was the first thing that came to mind about technical criteria. Two, why are only technical criteria at issue? That was my second question. Three, who is the, quote, water supply project engineering team, end quote? I figured I should have probably known about that, but then I heard that wasn't ever public before as a designation. So I'm glad I was here today for some of this. Now, I have a way bigger question than anybody wants to hear, so I'm going to use a little thing from today's paper. Did you read about the 100 trillion little good bodies that are living in your body? Good bacteria And there's a huge federal study on the human microbiome. He's a professor of microbiology at Stanford. His name is Dr. David Relman, and probably many of you probably know him. He said, the microbiome, how did I pronounce it? Biome, B-I-O-M-E, how do you pronounce that? Biome, oh, thank you, I knew I had the accent wrong. The microbiome project, though huge in scope, only begins to describe the life forms within us. Relman said, quote, the whole business is humbling. It seems like the more we learn, the less we know, end quote. And that addresses my concern about this kind of stuff. Because we can quantify it, we assume it is closer to the truth than if we can only sit down for maybe 4 hours, not just an hour and a half, and have some really good discussion. Just because we get the numbers doesn't mean we know much more necessarily, because only in humility can we begin to understand the scope of our ignorance, including about water projects. And I think humility should have been one of the criteria used to select the criteria. I really do. I'm not making this up. I'm an ethicist and a theologian. Humble means literally, etymologically, grounded. And then we would realize that our footing is in the well-being of the planet. That should be prior to all that. Our understanding of this ground is only preliminary. We don't know even the majority of the parts of all this issue, and we don't understand their interaction. And then I want to highlight, this is incomprehensible without including the environmental components in it. If I want to say, and I mentioned this to Sam, I thank him for all his patience with us. So you have lemons, he said, and you have oranges, and then you want to make sure that you've got all apples. I said, by what criterion did you get the apples? You turn a lemon into an apple and an orange into an apple. Well, hell, that's pretty good biology. It's mysterious how you can do that. You don't really understand, do you, if you start limiting things like that and turning them into each other. I won't go on with all the comments that I actually have typed out to say, but I want to quote only one more source. I said we would do humility, we would do respect, we would do gratitude, and we'd do providence. That is careful forethought, providence. Those would be our four criteria to start before we get there. Enforced by law that redefines humanity's governance relationship to what he calls the sacredness of Mother Earth and the natural world. This includes the integration of human rights-based approach, ecosystem approach, and culturally sensitive and knowledge-based approaches. The world must forge a new economic system that restores harmony with nature and among human beings. We can only achieve balance with nature if there is equity among us, and that includes nature. Here today, we have a knowledge-based approach, but all three others were missing. And friends, I'm going to turn 70 in a month. I celebrate having lived on planet Earth that long without being rejected, given some of the stuff I've done to it. But I am no longer going to pretend that there are worldviews that don't count when you're having simply a technical definition discussion. Thank you.
Jeff, you have a hard one to come after, but have a try at it.
Thank you, Elizabeth. That was really, really good. I don't know what I can follow that up with. I think that a lot of the central issue around any of the contention that we've had here is in coming into this town and then getting active with the politics. You know, we had a previous board that tried to get through a 602 acre foot, you know, water supply. That freaked everybody. I really appreciate Director Clift's approach. I mean, how can you not appreciate that? Let's go incremental. I mean, the water acreage was 602 and not 600 because it would have been a third module. In other words, we were poised. We were getting set up to maybe triple the population of this town. Even the people on the waiting list don't want that. They want to be here, and I think most of the so-called environmentalists aren't against having the people on the waiting list get their property. They just don't want to end up in another, you know, really crowded beach town that starts having all the crime and the traffic and all that stuff. We're all cognizant that this place is nicknamed Paradise, and we do want to keep it that way. So in doing my envelope math, the previous boards and the previous manager went through a $10 million settlement. That money's all gone. Approach, not scare the living daylights out of us who really like our environment. We really like going down to the beach and seeing a pristine, natural, unmessed up, you know, glimpse of the greater being that is everything. So, you know, thanks for the good work. Thanks for the sessions here. And please do pursue, you know, another 50 acre feet here. You can do a few hookups. It'll help the coffers of the town, but not to overwhelm us. Those of us who are from L.A., who grew up in L.A., growth and development is like, I feel like an ex-smoker moving out of L.A. And I don't want to be polluted like that ever again. So thank you, Director Cliff, Director McKinnon, and everybody up here for being much more reasonable and a much better ethics board than we've had previously. Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff. I want to support our district engineer. He does many, many things beyond being the point man with Army Corps. He's involved in every one of our utilities and so many other functions that's needed. Last but not least is Jim Webb.
Hello. My name is Jim Webb, and I wanted to make a couple of comments. I guess this is, I missed the, we're free to comment about anything at this. Is that right? Okay.
Within our jurisdiction.
Okay. just one comment about Amanda's example about putting the underground utilities in Park Hill. We have a house down on Marine Terrace, and we got together and decided we wanted to underground the utilities there because we felt like it kind of spoiled the view of the ocean and stuff. And we got together and found out how much it would cost, and it was a lot of money, and everyone agreed to it. And those utilities were undergrounded. My point is sometimes people do things that are beyond just their self-interest. The people that removed those utility poles, it really didn't affect their view. It really affected the view of the people who lived behind them. There were no utility poles on the ocean front. So people sometimes do things that are not in their clearly in their me taken in that type of process. The key one that I see missing is the identification of who is a stakeholder and who is not a stakeholder. And by that I mean people should be allowed to participate, that represent a point of view. That point of view should be known ahead of time, and those points of view should be solicited. But to skip that step and simply go to a public meeting like this and claim that that is a stakeholder process, I think is incorrect and is not typically what's done in a facilitated stakeholder process. The other problem that I had is that I hoped that we would have an opportunity to help decide what the criteria were upon which a decision would be based, not simply to vote on which criteria being presented to me I prefer or don't prefer. And I think that was a shortcoming of this particular process. I just want to go to the notion of a sensitivity analysis that is perhaps overlaying what we're trying to accomplish here. And one of the things I read was that conclusions can be judged to be sturdy, robust, and enduring if the neighborhood of assumptions is wide enough to be credible, and if the corresponding interval of inferences is narrow enough to be useful. And the reason I think that's germane here is I don't think we need to consider everything. Obviously, there's some kind of weigh out their ideas. But I think we have to have a range of alternatives that represent adequately the views of stakeholders in the community. And when I look at the options over there on the table, I'm kind of reminded of going into an ice cream parlor, and it's like, well, there's vanilla, French vanilla, vanilla bean, or double vanilla. Which would you like? And I said, well, I don't want vanilla. I want strawberry or something. And I see six flavors of desal and one flavor of kind of whale rock or something of that sort. And I think that is prematurely judging what alternatives are, in fact, practical for a town like Cambria. This is probably just my own bias, but I think trying to make a big, huge engineering project out of the problem we have with water is not serving us well. I think that we got today, and I think that's a mistake. I think that is not in keeping with what a lot of people would like to see happen in this community. I thank you for opportunities to talk. It's a lot better to be able to talk to you folks than it is to have to go through a mediated kind of situation, and would encourage you to take it as a template for future engagement with the community. Thanks.
Thank you, Jim. I'd like to touch on conservation. The state has mandated that we have a 5% reduction in water usage by 2020. If you assume that we have 800 acre feet as our normal annual supply, and 5% of that's 40 acre feet, and for five homes per acre feet, that's 200 connections that could apply just by conversations, just what Jim is talking about. So conservation is one of our primary goals that we set up this year. And it really is going to bear the low-hanging fruit, if you will, for our water demands. I think this is a great meeting, and I also support the constraints that the Corps has had to put up with. They have a charter that came out of the appropriations, and they have limits. And as I said at the outset, we don't have that limits, and we're open to looking at other things. Hopefully we can work together, and I'm sure we will, and converge to a mutually agreeable solution. But it'll be, I think, many, just as we've all said. It's not going to be one single item. Last comments, Director Cliff.
Yeah, I hope you're all here at the next board meeting, which is a budget meeting. And you'll 2 years ago, when the last time we had conservation funding was like $2,000, I think you'll see it up close to $100,000, and I would like to see you support that.
Again, thank you, Army Corps. You put up a lot of flack there, but we appreciate your time. And yeah, that's right. They're used to it. Thank you very much. Meeting adjourned.